Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave.
And John.
And JD.
Woohoo! Party time! Here we are. I'm back from vacation. Though you guys didn't know that because you listened to an episode that was pre-recorded last week.
Couldn't escape it on Facebook.
No, you can escape it.
You were posting from your vacation.
I managed to escape it. I had no idea.
You don't even watch TV.
It's TV.
Exactly.
So, I'm going to talk about my week a little bit. I was down the shore with my family, with my granddaughters. It was their first quote-unquote official vacation, even though they're only 3 months old. So,
did you manage to lose them?
No. They're not that exciting yet.
Yeah.
But we had fun, you know. They had their first boat ride. We went and saw dolphins and then my daughter took them down to the beach one day. And while I was there, I also acquired a new Marvel Select figure, Abomination. So it's the second villain in my collection. I was happy about that. And then when I got home, I was pleasantly surprised to see Iron Fist waiting for me on Netflix. And I am 8 episodes in so far, 2 to go.
I heard it's good. Is it good so far?
It is 100 times better than...
So it's at least barely okay.
Well...
Is that what you're saying? Is that it? It's just...
I mean, I know it wasn't a high bar to jump over, but...
Batman Forever looked great compared to that.
What about Batman and Robin?
It's tough. Yeah. I mean, you're never going to beat Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze.
I used to see you.
Worst casting ever.
Yeah, right.
The Iceman coming. He's got some great lines, though. The movie sucks balls, but he's got some funny lines.
Well, of course. I mean, those are the only things we remember about it. That and the back credit card.
I remember being so angry at that movie. Like, I remember sitting in the theater. I was 17. It was the first time I remember going to see a movie and being like, this sucks, and being angry because Bane was making people, like, go boing when he threw them. And I was, and at the time, I thought I was 17, so I thought Nightfall was, like, art. You know, so I thought, man, this is a total disservice. This made me.
Or oh, my God, you just said something very profound.
I usually do. What did I say?
Because you were 17, you thought Nightfall was like art.
I did. I was 17. I'm like, I read it now, I'm like, oh.
But yes, exactly. When you're a kid, like, you know, what's another good example? The Killing Joke. I mean, yes, it's a very good book, but, you know, to consider it like the greatest piece of comic art ever might be questionable.
Alan Moore thinks.
There you go.
But there's a great, I think it's Bradbury that said, the golden age of science fiction is 12. You know, so anything you read in your youth is going to hold a special place in your heart, regardless of the flaws that it has. Because right. it's what opened your mind up.
Oh my God, I'm stuck with Danny Dunn. and the Mad Scientist Club.
So, right, but by the time Batman 89 came out, you know, like, that's, like, you're comparing everything to that when you see it on the screen, so.
That was the move, like, if I could pinpoint one moment in my life that, like, changed me, it was going to see Batman 89, because I was 9, I was a child. I remember I was at the mall, in line with going into theater, and my heart, like, racing as that Danny Elfman song kicked in. Like, that is a high that I will never be able to replicate, you know? And that's something that's something that only the, you know, youth can give you.
That's the last time I remember ever standing in an actual line for that went out the door for any kind of movie.
Yeah, this wrapped around the mall. Like,
yeah. No, I agree. I think that's the last time I remember waiting in a long line. Like,
I stood in line for Phantom Menace tickets like a decade later. That was like a, remember people like, no. Like a week early to get it?
Before anybody could get any reviews for it.
So
correct. Opening,
but it was so funny because opening weekend, me and my brother and our friend, John, not you, O'Grady, a different John, it was Sunday afternoon. We're driving around trying to figure out what we're going to do. And we said, oh, let's go to a movie. And opening weekend of Phantom Menace, we go up and we're like, we know it's probably sold out, but you guys have tickets? And they're like, oh, yeah, sure, no problem.
That should have been your first clue.
Exactly.
Stupid media suckered us.
You tell kids that these days with their reserved seats and their Cineplex 28 and all that and IMAX everywhere, they wouldn't believe you.
Did you do anything fun this week, John?
I acquired myself one girlfriend.
What?
I'll put the unboxing up later on YouTube. I'm trying to do the system updates, but I'm not sure they're taking.
Okay. What did that set you back?
Basically, what's that number? Everything. Yes.
This is going in a weird place.
But I've just been kicking around. I watched all of Iron Fist 2, and I have definite opinions on that, but we'll wait until next week to talk about it. Damn it.
We have to give JD a chance to watch it.
That might never happen. not while Daniel is on, not even on the airwaves, while Daniel Tiger is a thing that exists online. Like, the idea of me watching a TV show is so foreign right now.
You can always put Netflix on your phone. I mean, come on.
Could. You'd have time to look at it.
I'm kind of with JD on this because, I mean, okay, like, I gotta tell you, three episodes of Iron Fist, I was watching in the background while I was writing code at work today. So, yeah. You know, it does help that I have like three monitors at work and I can have one with video and the other two are work, but.
So you were putting.
Yeah, just, you have time.
You were putting as much attention into watching Iron Fist as you do to this show.
No, I was putting a hell of a lot more. It was work.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you know, if I put that little, I would wind up recoding Windows Vista. So, but yeah, otherwise nothing big. Started watching The Expanse as well.
What's that?
It's a TV show based on a series of books. I haven't read the books. Maybe I should. TV show is pretty good. The only reason I'm watching is because a lot of people have been telling me that it was really worth it. That it was very cool. So, you know, I'm getting into it. It's pretty interesting so far.
What's that? Is that on TV or is that on Netflix? What?
That is on Amazon Prime.
Ah.
Prime doing some good stuff like, originals. Got that Jack Ryan show.
Has anyone watched that?
No,
I haven't. But have you seen The Tick?
No.
Okay. That would be worth your time, JD. If you like The Tick, that was very it was very good. It was to the spirit of the original print.
Funny.
I know. But it's very short. You know, it's not.
Is it as good as a 90s cartoon?
It is. It adheres to that, not the live action one, which sucked.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I love the first time I discovered The Tick was in that Saturday morning cartoon, and it was, you know, again, I was 15 or something, 14, 15, something like that, and it was hilarious.
Oh no, but when they floated the first episode to see if they were going to actually, you know, do the series, at the end of that, the very last thing that The Tick said in that episode. And I was just sitting there going, oh yeah, this is the cartoon. This is The Tick. This is what I want to see more of. So yeah, it was just perfect. You'd like it. If you find time in the next 30, 40 years, I'd check it out.
I'm good. He'll be in school eventually. Well, he's in preschool now, but I mean, like, he'll be in actual school soon.
Yeah. Then there's helping him with homework. School projects, Little League.
So do we not need to ask you what you did because you already told us, JD?
I worked all weekend. I probably put in a 50-hour work week.
You know,
good for you.
I'd say you should take time to enjoy stuff, but you probably wrote like four books and then I'm out of time and I'm really jelly.
I spent last week plotting the next book. and got notes on the series, though, so I have to go back and do some adjustments because I got some good notes. But then, yeah, I got like four things in the air that I'm juggling.
Ye gods.
See, John, I would say that, you know, the time suck of trying to find a girlfriend should be put into writing a book, but he has a kid and a wife and is still able to do all that. What's your excuse?
Let me elucidate you. JD, do you remember what your wife looks like?
Yeah, well, she works from home, so we see each other all the time.
Oh, you bastard! Yeah. How the hell did you do that?
She's awesome at what she does. She threatened to leave her old job probably 10 years ago, and they said if we let you, because she was working in Chicago, and that's about a good hour drive from where we live, in the morning. And they said, if we let you work from home, will you stay? And she said, yes, I will. So she literally works at our house. It's great. We're having a 2-year-old. It's great. But we have it, so it's a nice little teeter-totter. But it works.
Well, that's depressing. I mean, I think great it's for awesome. You. Like, no, I'm. It's awesome for you. Yeah, it's kind of depressing to me. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. I mean, that's perfect, really. It's what all of us should be able to do.
We're lucky.
Yeah.
And she makes more money than me.
Oh, jeez. Okay. I think that's enough of JD.
You're just being mean.
Don't hate the player.
Exactly.
Hate the game.
Yeah.
I'm from the 90s.
So,
because that's the last time you watch TV?
It's pretty damn close. That's the way it feels. Seinfeld's still a thing?
No, sorry.
Oh.
Speaking of things that'll make John mad, let's check in on our Twitter followers and what they have to say about some of the articles we've talked about.
This week's were interesting.
Yeah, so we had talked about Joaquin Phoenix and him not really caring what fan expectations were for the Joker. And the lower 1% responded, I thought he quit acting. Either way, he is crazy enough to play the Joker, but is he smart enough?
I don't understand what that means, the is he smart enough part. That's a bizarre comment.
Yeah, I mean, I never thought of Joaquin Phoenix as unintelligent.
Well, I met some actors that are dumb as sticks, too, but they're good at their jobs, you know?
Right.
But the thing with the Joker is you can't just play him as just crazy. You also have to play him as a genius. And, I mean, it's easy for a very smart actor to play a dumb person. It is probably very hard for a dumb actor to play a smart person.
I'm going to go on the limb and say the guy who got an Oscar for playing Johnny Cash will be just fine.
Well, he's got the menacing down, at least.
Yeah. And Comics Are Cool said, absolutely. I think instead of worrying about what the fans think and feel and focusing on how to actually develop his rendition of the Joker, it will be less stressful and more of a natural performance than fan service. Fan service,
which is a nice way of saying he don't give a F about what the fans think.
Yeah. No, I mean, and that's true. And I think we talked about this. We talked about it is about the article is, I don't feel that, Heath Ledger cared too much about, you know, expectations for the character. Like, yes, he talked to Jack Nicholson a little bit about playing the character, but like when they came out and I remember fans not liking the makeup tests when they came out.
I remember that too.
You know, and then like as soon as he was on set and stole the scene, it's like no one cared anymore. So
people kind of forget that there was some backlash when he was cast. I remember, you know, 2008 was a different, it was 10 years ago, it was a different era. I remember people complaining because he had just been in Brokeback Mountain. It's like, oh, that guy, he played a gay guy. You don't want him playing the Joker, you know? And we're in a different world. And once the trailers came out, people shut up, you know?
Yes.
I think there's something to be said about people doing their job. And I think being a fan sometimes can hurt not just an acting performance, but just like a job performance, you know? Like, if you love the X-Men, you get a chance to write the X-Men. If you're constantly chasing the ghost of Chris Claremont, you're going to fail.
Right. No.
Plus, there's the fact that basically, no matter what you do, there's going to be a fan base that hates it.
Yeah.
Right. So why care?
Right. Exactly. There's so many angry, I will use the term, internet rage nerds that you can't possibly make them happy. And if you do, you're McDonald's. And who wants to be McDonald's? Like, yeah, they make a lot of money, but their food's not bad. It's mediocre. No one wants to just be mediocre.
I would put forth that there is no way to make, like, you can't be McDonald's in this case. There is no way he's going to be able to play it that would make everybody happy.
No, nor should he, you know?
Exactly. Like,
there should be people that go, I hate this, because, especially with this particular character, because we have seen multiple adaptations, like good adaptations. Even Cesar Romero's Joker had a lot of positive stuff going. You know, there've been so many vast takes on the Joker that I want to see something different. I didn't like Jared Leto's, but I didn't, you know, I respect that he did something different with it.
Right.
Sure.
Right.
Sure. Yeah.
Good.
No. I'm just saying. Yeah. Sure. Jared Leto there. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, like, he did the post Malone Joker. So I mean, like, it's different than what I liked, but I know people that like it. Like a lot of high school kids that I know dug the performance, and I don't think it really has a lot of resonance to it, but it had its fans, you know? Not my cup of tea.
Right.
Okay, fair enough.
And before we move on, have you tried the new Smokehouse bacon cheeseburger from McDonald's?
I can't have gluten, and McDonald's has gluten in their meat.
Damn you.
Well, think about that. They put flour in their meat.
It's not mediocre anymore.
Well, you always have to make a profit off of cutting the product.
Yes,
boy, are they good at that.
All right, so moving on to people still talking about the Wolverine costume. People still have opinions. The Great Canadian Neckbeard said he's being mind controlled. Once the controlling breaks, he'll find a costume that doesn't make him look like he works in a Chinese laundromat.
Yeah, that's a little racist for me, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a joke. And then Peter DeVilbiss, Wolverine's new costume is trash. Just real simple.
I don't think he's wrong.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nothing for that. He's right.
And then our good friend Troy Brownfield, out of nowhere this past week, tweeted, "I have a hard time recalling any podcast that I've been on when I have not had a drink in my hand or nearby. Superhero speak and who was this?
CC Cavalcade.
CC Cavalcade are enablers.
I don't know what he's talking about."
Troy's a good dude though, but I don't get the Elon Musk hashtag. I think I'm gonna have to. I know he listens, so I'll have to ask him to clarify that at some point.
Yes, Troy. What did you mean by hashtag Elon Musk? Wait.
You've heard about Elon Musk smoking one on?
Man, he killed his company took a dump. I know he's trying to look cool. Like, first of all, I've never seen someone succumb to peer pressure so quickly in my entire life. It was like an after school special, and two of the executives quit. The stock plummeted. Like, remember what I said about him being Lex Luthor in real life if there was no Superman?
Yes.
I was way wrong.
Yeah.
Like, Lex Luthor would, like, not let that happen. He's kind of a dude.
I think he's losing it. He just, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, are we sure that dummy in the car that's orbiting the Earth right now is not actually his body and a robot took his place?
Pretty sure.
Pot-smoking robot?
Well, you know, it's trying to approximate cool.
There's a pitch there.
Oh, no.
So I'm actually – it's funny because I'm just looking at the CC Cavalcade's reply was, hopefully it doesn't negatively impact your stock prices.
Yeah, so that dude knows we're on the same page.
Yes, and then –
Troy's hailing Satan.
Yes. Troy says, I'm covered. Hail Satan.
He's got money invested in hell or something.
I don't know. It looks like the GIF looks like Elmo in hell. So
it does. I have to keep that GIF from my 2-year-old because that would freak him out.
You're such a good parent.
I am.
So I'm just wondering, Troy, if you're listening, were you drunk? And just heard the news about Elon Musk when you tweeted that? It's the only way this makes sense.
Or were you in mid-cheech with Joe Rogan?
Okay, so what else we got?
So we also have...
Never poor Troy.
So we talked about the rules of Disney as for Marvel.
First rule is don't talk about Disney.
Yeah, exactly. And we actually had quite a few replies. I just grabbed the latest one to talk about. It's from Rob Foster, and he said, partially related, Walt Disney insisted on handling Annette Funicello,
thank you,
on-screen image even after she left employee to do the beach party films.
So why is she never
in the particularly revealing outfits, but always tasteful swimwear and PJs.
Hashtag tweets from 1967.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Annette Funicello. I mean, I am old enough to remember watching the Mickey Mouse Club with her in it.
Wow, you're old.
You're just getting that now? It was technically in reruns when I saw it, but it was early in the 70s.
Hmm. Okay. So.
That was the reaction.
I think
seriously, is it me or is that the most random factoid that's ever been tweeted at you?
It was, but I kind of appreciate random factoids. That's why I brought it up, and it just shows that even back then, Disney's been very controlling about the image they present.
This is true.
It's kind of a one thing with them, isn't it?
Yeah, and then finally, thanks to Todd, being on our show last week and talking about his book, Robots vs. Princesses. If you haven't done so, make sure you head over to dynamite.com and order your copy today. Dynamite replied, said, we're glad you liked it. Issue 2 will be out on September 19th.
So awesome.
Just a reminder, issue 2 will be out September 19th from Dynamite. And Dynamite, since we now know you're following us on Twitter and listening, if you have anything else you'd like us to review, just send us an email.
Todd has a lot of good things to say about that. He says that they're good folks to work with.
Yeah.
You can also get that comic on Amazon, too. That's where I got it. You can use the reader.
Also Comixology.
Yep.
Yes.
And it's good. This is one of the ones I like, so.
Todd's good, man. I liked having him on last week. I think he's really talented. I hope he gets a break off this. I hope it leads into something, mainly because I like seeing my friends succeed.
Me too.
Me three. Okay.
Me four?
Wait. Stop. We could do this all night. I also like seeing me succeed, putting that out there. But.
You didn't write Robots versus.
No, not this time. So also speaking of Twitter, real quick, I just wanted to throw this out there and, I was going to talk to you about this beforehand, guys, and I forgot. So, we're, as you know, we're part of the Nerd Podcast Mafia, and they want to start doing a, podcast versus podcast type thing. It'll be a crossover.
Like a fight?
Kinda, mafia style.
Interesting.
So we're going to do a crossover thing, and we have to start hyping it up. And of course, we're going to pick a topic that can easily split fandom down the middle. And we're going to start with The Dark Knight Rises. Some people can't stand it.
I fight dirty.
I was going to say.
Poke people in the eyes.
Yeah. I thought it was a cool one to start with because the podcast wasn't around yet when that came out. And I know that people are torn on that movie.
So how would this whole thing work?
We're still working out the details, but I think we're going to hype it up on our shows and then all get together in a crossover episode.
That'd be kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, and debate it. And at the end, no one's mind will be changed, but a lot of insults will be thrown.
It's good TV or good podcast. good media, good content.
So I need to know because I already kind of said I was on the anti Dark Knight Rises team. Where do you guys fall?
I enjoy it, but I look at it as I think it's an inferior sequel to Dark Knight, which I think is the best, but I think it's good. It's just like an Elseworlds type of story is the way I look at it.
That's one way to put it. Yeah.
As long as there's no Batgirl sex, that's fine with me.
Different movie.
I know, but
I was going to say, did I miss something in that movie? Did I go to the bathroom?
But the Yeah, my issue's always been The Dark Knight was such a good movie that was such a bad sequel.
Yeah.
I think it has its merits. I do think it's underwhelming when compared to The Dark Knight, but I think there's things about it that I like. There's things about it that I don't like, but on the whole, it's definitely the lesser of the three, but for the sake of argument, I'd be willing.
Right.
Because it's not going to be a great show if it's just, 12 people shitting on Dark Knight Rises.
No. There's definitely, we definitely have some pro people. Fans on Patrol, is pro Dark Knight Rises. And I believe the guys from, Cult 45 as well. So it'll work.
I adore the name of that podcast, by the way.
It's not Cult, it's Cult.
I know, it's awesome. Yes. I adore it.
But their logo is 45 logo.
Works every time.
Poor Billy D.
Why would you say poor Billy D? He is the man and has known it for quite some time. Praise be, Billy D.
All right. Let's move on to some Marvel news. We got a first look at season 3 of Daredevil. If you guys had a chance to watch the teaser yet.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
It was okay.
It's not much to it. I mean, it's very Daredevil-y. You know, him in the black, talking to a confessional.
He's brooding. He's basically, being Daredevil. Brooding. That's about it.
Daredevil. It's what Daredevil does, you know? Right.
Yes. But what I'm trying to figure out, though, is some of the images that I've seen and the clip, it looks like he's back to the old simple black costume.
It could be flashback stuff. I don't know. I don't know why he would in the story. My thought was it's a flashback.
Could be. Well, because he'd rather die as Daredevil than live as Matt Murdock.
Yeah, but still, why didn't he wear the sweet ass suit? Why does he have to wear the ninja suit?
Yeah.
Still die as Daredevil.
Yes.
But it looks good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're right. We didn't get much, but it looks really good. Looking forward to it. I mean,
I'm in on the show. They just got to say, hey, season 3 is coming up, and that one I will make.
Right.
So is he going to lose his fist too?
Hey, spoilers.
I didn't say anything about that. I was talking about Daredevil. No, really. I mean, it seems like all these, all current seasons are going towards a very, very dark trend. You know, and I thought watching a story about a superhero or, walking the hero's path is about, triumph at the end, not like
but that's Daredevil though. Like Matt Murdock's life doesn't get easier because he's Daredevil. Like that's what makes him different than others is that Daredevil is like, he is like a Hamlet. Where he's constantly brooding. And sometimes if you read a lot of Daredevil, it can get depressing. But I mean, like the character, I just think works better when he's like that. He's like, he fulfills that niche.
He's Spider-Man without the lighthearted team and the quips.
He's a little, I think that's a good comparison. I think he's got a little Spider-Man and a little Batman.
Yeah.
You minus the sci-fi elements of Batman and the humor of Spider-Man, and somewhere in the middle, you find Daredevil. And I think that's what makes the character, to be honest with you.
Oh, very much so. I think it's why I like him.
Oh, ditto.
All right. So moving on, Kevin Feige confirms there will be more female-led Marvel films that are in the works.
Squirrel Girl. No, sorry.
I like the idea, of course, but the quote that they're basing it on, he doesn't specify any characters or anything like that. He just basically says, I'm anxious for the time where it is not a novelty that there is female-led superhero movie, but that it's the norm.
I agree with that.
And it is a less story of, oh, look at a female hero, and it's more a story of, oh, what's this about? Who's the character? I'm excited. Which, yeah, right. Again, it's the right attitude, but like he didn't come out and say, oh, this we're working on this movie and this character for a movie,
Well, I think they took a bath. They took a beating on the Wonder Woman thing, like DC's made a lot of steps, but, they beat Marvel to the punch with Wonder Woman, which wasn't. So I think they're kind of forced to play catch up a little bit. And I've had like a couple thoughts on this. I'm like, well, I kind of like the Marvel universe where it is, but at the same time, there's expiration dates on all the characters. And if you don't decide to go the James Bond route and recasting Captain America, mm-hmm. what do you do? I mean, you need to find other properties to use. And it's kind of a risk, to be honest with you. Like, who's to say this Captain, well, this Captain Marvel movie will work, I think, because he's so tied in. But I mean, like, I don't know where they go from here. Like, who else would you build a franchise around? Like, I don't think Angela works. That's the first one that popped into my head. I don't know who else, I don't know where else they go.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I kind of like a She-Hulk movie, but that's me.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah, that's a great idea, actually.
Yeah.
Done in the style of, like, Shazam.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, there'd be plenty to work with that. There's plenty of backstory, and she's an interesting character.
That's a fantastic idea, Dave. I would, yes, never mind. I'm on board with that.
Oh, you know what? You know, we could get, like, Ang Lee to direct it, too.
No, what? Bite your tongue. Bite your tongue off. You just ruined it.
Like, the Dan Slott She-Hulk series was a lot of fun, like, with the, like, where it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek and as a lawyer. Like, I don't think you'd make a whole movie like that, but a couple scenes like that would be fantastic.
Right, and I think it's kind of like you can do interesting things with She-Hulk without making it, like, you can make it about a woman struggling in the world without it being a movie about a woman struggling in a man's world. Because she's She-Hulk struggling in the regular world.
I think the She-Hulk character gives you a lot of latitude. And the fact that She-Hulk is so different from the Hulk, and you can tell, then they have, right? You know, comics have been on this for years, where they've done different kinds of stories with her. And I'm excited to see what they could do with that. I mean, you got me fired up. I want to see that.
Right. And I'd rather, I mean, again, no offense to Scarlett Johansson, but I'm not really up for a Black Widow movie, because we know her story now.
It depends on what they, like, if it's a story where they try to pull, where the Red Room tries to pull her back in, that could be cool.
Maybe. We'll see.
Well, you gotta know there's a lot going on in the background. I mean, she's a super spy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's gotta be other stuff going on, other story tell that are within the same timelines.
Well, you gotta look at the real world, for example. Like, yeah, as we've seen, Russian spies that no longer wish to be Russian spies do not meet with good endings.
Yeah.
No, they don't. But again, she's so embedded with everyone else now. Can you pull off just a solo Black Widow movie without people going?
With the right writing.
Yeah, with the right writing. I think the bigger problem isn't with the Black Widow character, but the fact that Scarlett Johansson has struggled carrying a genre film in particular on her own. I think that's the bigger struggle than the character, because I do think there's a good story there. Like, I mean, if I can come up with something with an idea, I'm sure the guy, you know, Kevin Feige and the army there are going to come up with something really good. I think the question is, can Scarlett Johansson carry it on her own? I think she works very well in playing off people. I don't know if she can do the lead.
They need a good director too.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, speaking of female-led Marvel movies, we did get this past week our first official look at Captain Marvel, and a lot of photos came out, and we also got an exciting first look at an alien race we have not seen.
The Skrulls are debuting their Christian rock band.
Alt-Christian, because, you know, the ears.
I mean, doesn't that what that looks like with them standing on the beach in the water? Doesn't that look like a 90s Christian, like a Creed album cover?
Don't go chasing waterfalls. Good cover.
That's
TLC. Yeah,
I know. It looks like the video.
A little bit. I didn't know where you were going. Yeah. Now I see it.
I mean, I think they look good. It'll be interesting.
Looks fine. Yeah. I mean, like, they're not going to look like that for much of the movie, right? They're Skrulls.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they'll probably, as they're coming out of the water, they'll probably change shape.
Right. That's what's cool about the Skrulls. You get that body snatcher vibe. I'm curious to see how they pull off. I like they're doing something like different when, like, they're going into the past, which, you know, I like the photo of her with the leather jacket and the 9-inch nail shirt. It's like, it's the most 90s bit of 90s that ever 90'd.
Nice.
Yes. It kind of felt like that was in response to Wonder Woman shot of her in front of the bank of TVs with all the different colors, because that was a very 80s shot.
Yeah, yeah. But I like that they're doing stuff like that with both properties. And, you know, it's that zeitgeist thing of, you know, people putting the female-led title, which is interesting, in the past. So it's cool.
Yes.
I have no idea what to read into that.
Of course, we also saw that Ronan the Accuser is back.
some with Jaimin Hansu's character, that I forget who's the pursuer from Guardians, who when we first meet Star-Lord.
Oh, right, right. Yes. So, I mean, because I don't know a lot of, I don't know what details, if any, have been revealed about the movie.
Very few.
So, I'm guessing this has something to do with the Skrull Kree War.
Yeah, that would be a safe assumption. I mean, you're getting Jude Law, Mar-Vell.
Right.
You know, which is cool because they're actually, I like that they're doing a Captain Marvel movie that actually deals with the original Captain Marvel. And here's what's weird. Did you guys notice that they have the photon Captain Marvel, the Monica Rambeau, but they're calling her Maria Rambeau. And I don't know, unless I was trying, you have any guesses on that of why they changed her name? Or is it supposed to be her mother, maybe?
I don't know. Unless they just want to include the character in some way. Because they've done that before.
Yeah, but why change her name? Like, it says the specific, the fighter shot one, it says Maria, quotations, Photon, Rambeau, but it's Monica Rambeau is the character. So I just wonder why the only thing I could come up with was, because Monica's not that weird of a name, there's no other Monicas floating around. The only thing I come up with, maybe it's the original female Captain Marvel's mother? I don't know.
Possibly. I don't know. Like we just said, we don't know a lot of details about this, so.
No. Nick Fury has no patch.
Yes. He's young, too. In fact, Samuel Jackson did tweet out when he saw the picture, he didn't realize it was him at first. You know, because of how good the special effect is on how young he looks.
It looks really like good at that.
They really are. It looks like, Coming to America era Samuel Jackson.
Oh, God. Coming to America.
Yeah, but I can't remember him ever really having hair like that.
No, you're probably right about that.
Yes. And of course, the main thing is he's got both eyes. So
yeah, one of them's fake.
Do we get to see how he lost his eye in this movie?
Knowing the way prequels like to tie in every stinking thing, probably.
Mm.
And then the question is, did we need that?
Well, let's see if it happens first. But I mean, it makes me think of Solo, where they had to do the whole, everything had to tie into every part of the Star Wars universe, and over the course of a weekend.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm going to remain suspect on that until I see it. But I don't know, man. It looks cool.
Yeah.
Just have to wait and see.
So it looks good so far. So we're excited for it. You know, we'll see if they can screw it up or not. It's not DC, so they probably won't.
That's what I was going to say.
And then our last bit of Marvel news is a rumor that there is two movies in the works. Captain Britain and the Black Knight.
I have no idea who those are.
You don't know who Captain Britain is?
No. I know there's like a hero named Beefeater, I think. But
he's a DC character.
He's basically maybe the British version of Captain America. That's a good way to put it.
Captain Britain's a cool character. He's Alan Moore did something in, I think, the early 80s, where it tied into some Arthurian legend stuff. And there was a really cool run from Paul Cornell in the late aughts when they did Captain America. And I think it was MI-13. There's a lot of stuff you can go with, like a lot of interventional kind of things, the Captain Britain core.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually explore different side of Marvel Universe. I'm not a huge Guy Ritchie fan, so this is the one. I don't know. He's got a style. There's no doubt. I enjoyed Snatch, but stuff he's made since then, nothing's really grabby.
Right.
Personally.
Yeah, I can't think of anything he's directed where I'm like, ooh, yeah, that's in my top 10. But it's not.
I'd rather see him get Matthew Vaughn if they were looking for a good British director.
Yeah. See, and I can't remember, and I wish my cousin was here. I could just ask him, or I'll call him up later. Because he used to read Excalibur comics. Was Black Knight in the Excalibur?
No, Black Knight is a.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, maybe gearing up for the Excalibur team for the MC.
I don't think so, because Excalibur is kind of... that's a D-list. Let's be real, that's a D-list Marvel property, and you got a lot of X stuff to get through before you get there. Like I said, MI-13 was Marvel's equivalent of that. They did a book on it, like I said, in the late 2000s, and it was pretty cool. Black Knight was a character in those stories.
Yeah, but I remember Excalibur. I don't remember Black Knight.
He wasn't in Excalibur. He was an Avenger and a Defender.
Is that like Shining Knight was a member of the Justice League?
No, Shining Knight was like a guy from the past. Like the Black Knight is the possessor of the Ebony Blade, which he's a modern guy, you know, Wikipedia. He's a cool character. Not a lot of times he's played a side role. You're Wonder Man type of hero.
Yeah. All right.
Hey, they made Scott Lang work as a movie, so I have no, you know, I laughed when I first heard they're going to do the Scott Lang version of Ant-Man. That was the C-level Ant-Man.
Yeah.
They made him work, though. They made him the Ant-Man, so.
They made the Guardians work.
Yeah.
They made Iron Man work when he was, you know, on the bottom of the barrel.
And now he's at the top.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see. Let's see what's going on across the aisle, guys, with DC.
Nothing. Moving on.
Well, the Doom Patrol TV show cast keeps adding more and more stars. So Alan Tudyk has joined as Mr. Nobody, and Timothy Dalton is coming on as the Chief. And did we mention Brandon Fraser on the show yet?
It's a very interesting cast, you know. I don't know enough, so I can't comment on the property. But Timothy Dalton is a crazy underrated actor. You know, he was a cool Bond. He was a great villain in The Rocketeer. Like he's talented.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely not questioning that. Yeah, they're getting a lot of A-list actors. They're putting together what looks like going to be a decent show. But I don't know if it's still yet enough to get me to buy the streaming service.
My wife said we're getting it for a month so she can watch Young Justice, and then we will promptly be rid of it.
I would do that too. I would be, yeah. So, like, maybe you wait until this is out, and then you just, you know, get it for a month to watch both, and then dump it.
I think that's the plan.
That's awesome.
You guys are cheating.
That's
not cheating. They're getting my month's worth of, like, if you have it for a month, you should only pay for it for a month.
Yeah. What is it that you just said, JD? Hate the game, not the player?
Something to that effect.
Yeah.
But that's the thing with the subscription service business model. Like, you get it for a month. Like, why? Like, it's like the gym membership idea. Like, gyms make money, not on the people that go to the gym, but those people go, oh, I'm going to go to the gym. And they go for 2 weeks. And then they forget because it's on their credit card and they pay their monthly bill. Martial arts dojos are the same way. They make money off people.
Yeah.
These streaming services are the same way.
Yeah. No, I agree. And of course, speaking of shows, that DC is going to have on their streaming service, they're also going to be doing Swamp Thing. And it was, revealed this week that Len Wiseman, who is, executive producer and director on Sleepy Hollow, will be directing the pilot episode for Swamp Thing. So
now we've Len Wise don't.
Hello?
What?
Whoa, that was weird.
Yeah, that was very strange.
Edit point.
DC even screws up our audio.
Yes.
As I was saying, Len Wiseman he's got an interesting story, man. He was a prop guy who created Underworld, pitched it, and got to make his movie. And then he's actually spiraled that into a pretty good career. And he's kind of reinvented himself in TV. Like, he did the pilots for Hawaii 5-0, Sleepy Hollow, Lucifer, The Gifted. And the cool part about TV is when you direct the pilot, you get on as an executive producer, so you don't got to do nothing. But, I mean, because you kind of set the tone for what the show is going to be like, you get that sweet money for the rest of the time it's on. So he's kind of become a go-to guy for this type of thing.
Cool. Sweet Swamp Thing one.
Did you watch that Swamp Thing show in the early 90s?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, me too.
It was really corny. It was really 90s.
Yeah. Again, I was 10, so I loved it. I'm sure they're horrible. I'm sure they're horrible if I were to go back and look at them.
I was very much older, and yes, they were horrible. I mean, for the time, that's what you had. And so without anything to compare it to, it was okay. But now. I don't think they age well.
But it was like it was nothing like the comic, though, right?
No. They were like little environmental.
Yeah.
Which actually does work with the Swamp Thing character, but I don't know. At the time, you're coming off the Alan Moore and Rick Beach stuff that was out there. I hope they do more of that kind of stuff than like with the Scott Snyder type of story.
Right. Well, I mean, a lot of people loved the Alan Moore Swamp Thing stuff.
Oh, it's awesome. Like, it's groundbreaking comics. Like, if you read, it's so cool because, like, the Alan Moore Swamp Thing really starts off as, I don't know if you've ever read them, Dave, but they start off very horror. And then by the end of the run, he's doing some, like, sci-fi, you know, mystical type stuff that's way different.
Right. Yeah.
It's neat. I think it was Rick Veitch that had him, because Swamp Thing can travel, you know, their version of Swamp Thing could travel through space and time by just, you know, being a plant, by being in two of plants. And I believe that he becomes part of the cross.
Right, yes. I did hear that. Kevin Smith talks about it all the time on his podcast because he really loves that run.
And there's a lot you can do. I mean, I'm just curious because there's so much that could. It's so weird because it's this big muck monster. But, you know, early or 80s Vertigo, man, you had a lot of leeway to take those kind of characters in weird directions. So it makes me wonder what they're going to do. Like, I'm more excited about this show than I probably have any right to be. But I don't know. I'm curious.
The only thing that's going to be interesting is because it's live action. I mean, yeah, they can do practical effects and makeup for a lot of it, but the Swamp Thing was pretty freaking powerful, and yeah. A lot of that is, you know, vines going everywhere, and I'm wondering how the effects budget is going to be, you know?
Great question.
Because the biggest problem they have with a lot of these is, you know, okay, so you've got a superhero, and you get to see him use his power like once or twice, and then all the other times during the storyline when normally it's all problem with the, you know, Iron Fist or whatever, he doesn't because, well, effects budget.
Well, that's a good question, right? Because on a streaming service, you're going to do 10 to 13 episodes a season as opposed to 24. Mm-hmm. And if they get the same exact budget as the CW shows, then the special effects should be amazing. But if they get half the budget because they're doing half the shows, then yeah.
This is what's weird is because they're launching the app. The thought that I would have is we have to invest heavily in these first couple properties because you have to bait people in.
Right.
So I think they have to go all out on these first few shows. Whereas, you know, network TV is a different thing. You're going to make your money off those, you know, TV commercials. Like, this is subscriptions. So. I don't know. We don't know enough about this DCU business model, but you have to spend money on Swamp Thing.
Right. Well, you have to spend money on Titans as well with Raven and what's her face?
Starfire.
Even Beast Boy. You notice in the preview, you don't see Beast Boy change into an animal.
No. Right. That could be for a lot of reasons. That could be because it's not, like, a lot of times when you release a trailer, stuff's not done.
Yeah.
Well, that didn't stop Deadpool.
But Deadpool, you can get away with shit. But I mean, like, we've kind of come to the point where it's better not to release anything than to get ahead of yourself and release some crappy looking unfinished graphics. Remember the Green Lantern movie? They released it. They were all like, oh, the graphics aren't finished. Then why did you show that to us if it wasn't done? And it turned out they lied.
Right.
It turns out they were done. They were just crappy.
They were crappy.
Poor DC. Well, you know, maybe they'll get it right on TV with the new Flash season coming up. And we got a new teaser released for season 5. It's the villain lurks in the shadows. Spooky. The thing that I found interesting is main villain this season is going to be Cicada.
Oh, Cicada, okay.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting choice.
If they do it like the comic, it could be cool. He lives the leader of the Cult of Speed. So... he's not a speedster himself, but that's
right. But all his followers start killing people the Flash has saved. At least that's what happens in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
At least it's somebody who's. It's not another speedster that's going after.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of beat that to death, didn't they?
Yeah.
Well, and I'm getting with all of these TV series, I'm getting really sick of the dark reflection bad guy. You know,
I agree.
Can we get an intelligent writer to come in with, you know, a bad guy with completely different powers so they have to match wits and powers instead of just, I have to be faster because he's faster than I was when I was faster than him? And
I don't think it's bad writing necessarily. I think it's just like what you do. And so many super villains are dark workers. Like, all of Batman's villains are dark reflections of various aspects of his personality. With the Flash, like, I do think that they leaned way heavy into the multiple speedsters thing. I don't know.
Yeah, they went.
Why?
They went way too far with their version of Savitar for season 3. It was just like.
Their version of Savitar wasn't Savitar. Right. Like, they just used the name.
Right, and you get to the end of the season, it's like, oh, it's. A time fragment of Barry, like, no.
And the sad thing is he could have killed Barry at any freaking time. anytime.
Right.
You know, it's just, it is kind of ridiculous.
Well, that's why you gotta write, you can't write yourself, like, you can't write yourself into it. Like, if they're too powerful, it's like, well, what do you, how do you stop them? So, like, I was watching, I'm doing research for this new book, right, that I'm writing, and I watched, this is going to sound weird, but I watched the Donald Sutherland Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I'd never seen it before. And I got to the end, and I kept thinking the whole time, like, man, they have really dug themselves into a hole. Like, how do you get out of this movie? And the answer is, everybody, the entire planet gets turned into the, into pod people. And,
yep.
And I respect them, because, man, that's a ballsy ending. You can do that in a movie, but in TV, like, you gotta come back. And like, you create these villains that are so powerful that it's kind of like, well, now we have to figure out a way to get them out. Right. You know, and that's tough, man.
Yeah. So, no more Dark Reflections.
We can only hope.
And the last thing, which I probably should have did this first since we were talking about the DC app. But the Titans, show will premiere at New York Comic Con.
Are you gonna go?
Probably. Yeah, no.
You should do like a live reaction and post it as like a Patreon episode or something like that.
Ooh, that's a good idea. Maybe we should do that, John.
We can do that because, you know, by the time that premieres, we'll probably be dead on our feet and need a rest.
So we'll sit in the theater, we'll watch it,
and then attempt to be ambulatory again.
Yes.
That's usually how it goes at the New York Comic Con.
Pretty much. So yeah, I mean, I thought that, they're actually doing it Wednesday. At 7:30, so it's right before the show starts, John. So we'll be plenty of energy. It's a great way to kick off our con. So,
all right, well, cool.
All righty.
What else we got?
And last news article I have. It's kind of DC related, but it's not. It's just one of their stars, Henry Cavill, has been cast as Geralt. Is that his name?
I have no idea.
Geralt from. For the Netflix's series, The Witcher.
Which is based on a game, yes. Right? Okay.
I think the games are actually based on a book.
Probably.
Series, excuse me.
So what, they've based the game on a book, so they're basing a series on the game, and now they'll have a movie on the series, and then a book, and then they'll write a book movie version of it.
All about the IP, brother. You got to create an IP that can go across multiple platforms.
Yeah, that's true anymore. So Netflix is aiming for a 2020 release for the show, and it'll be 8 episodes long.
That's cool. That's a good number.
So, yeah, no, this will be interesting because I'm also kind of curious, you know, like, I want to see Henry Cavill in more stuff, you know. I saw The Man from U.N.C.L.E. with him in it. Have you guys seen that movie?
Have not.
No.
One of the most highly underrated movies. But it's funny because Armie Hammer is in it.
Armie Hammer. Okay.
You know, who played the Lone Ranger and was originally going to play Batman, and Henry Cavill. And Armie Hammer's an American, and Henry Cavill is British, and Henry Cavill's playing an American, and Armie Hammer plays, he's not British, he has a German accent.
What did Henry Cavill's mustache play?
a Polak. So, but first off, I love the movie because he plays the charming, heroic, charismatic character in the movie, and it's like while I'm watching it, I'm like, damn it, that's the Superman I want. Why am I getting it in this movie?
Because Zack Snyder doesn't get Superman and never did. I saw him in Mission Impossible this summer.
I haven't seen that playing, yet, so go ahead.
So he plays a hero that's revealed to be a villain, and he's really, really good. And he's got a badass mustache, and I'm watching the whole time going, you know what? Good for Paramount for making this stick, because it's a good look. Like, I dug it. Like, he was really good in that. He was a great villain. Like, he's really good. And you're right, it's a damn shame that he never really got to
it. Right. He's a good actor, and
he is.
The Superman movies don't let that show because of Zack Snyder. So
gets to be super death man,
super brooding.
I'm an alien and no one understands me.
He's super
Batman. Don't you wish I was Batman? Like, yeah, like, you know, I remember seeing the trailer for Man of Steel and being like, this is it. They get Superman. This is going to be awesome. And then it wasn't.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just got to let a bus full of kids die, right?
Hey, Ray Kinsella told him to. Like, spent time in the Field of Dreams and it got him jaded. I mean, that casting was great. They had Maximus and Ray Kinsella as his fathers, as Jor-El and Jonathan Kent. And it was like, man, this is perfect. How can you screw it up? Oh, you cast the guy? You hired the guy from Sucker Punch. Oh, man. You screwed that up. I will never get over that.
But how do you really feel?
You hired me for my
opinions. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yep.
All right, John. So before we say goodnight, do you have an interview you'd like to share with the people?
Let me check my notes. This is Tony DiGirolamo.
Say that five times fast with a mouthful of pasta.
Oh. There's no way. There's no way.
Tony, Jesus, not my love.
Sorry. Oh, that's okay. And here I am. I've misplaced my notes, which, you know, that's just perfect.
So stalling. So you talked to him at Wizard World Philly.
Yes. It's been a while.
I know he's most known for working on the Simpsons comics, right?
Yes. We both talked, didn't we?
I don't believe so.
That was both of us.
No, that was just you, sir.
Yeah.
Well,
he's done the Travelers. He's done Super Frat and Bart Simpson. He's done the Bart Simpson, the Simpson cartoon, comics, and probably a bunch of other stuff that I have a list of here somewhere.
He also did a book on the Jersey Devil.
Yep. Yeah, the Jersey Devil.
He has a webcomic called Super Frat.
Okay. So you're looking at the Wikipedia then.
Yes.
Very good. So anyway, yeah, crossed by him at the Wizard World Comic Con. We're still outlaying interviews from those because we just have so many. Can't wait to see what we do in New York Comic Con with you free. Oh boy. Here is Tony.
So this is John O'Grady, Superhero Speak, and I am here with
Tony DiGirolamo.
And you do what?
I do a lot of things. I'm mostly known for writing on the Simpsons comics. I just came out with a new story in the Mighty Moe Sizzlack #1. It's a story called Moe and Barney's Excellent Adventure.
Okay.
I also am known for my own comics. I did The Jersey Devil, The Travelers, The Fix. Mm-hmm. I also do the Webcomic Factory at thewebcomicfactory.com and Superfrat at superfrat.com, which includes such titles as Lester Crenshaw is Dead and Post-Apocalyptic Nick at the Webcomic Factory.
That's it?
There's actually 24 comics on the site. I bet I couldn't even name them all at this point. But, we're constantly creating at the Webcomic Factory.
Okay. Let's start with your experience with The Simpsons. So you did for The Simpsons.
I've done about 60 stories over the years, mostly for Bart Simpson, but The Simpsons. I was in Little Homer #1, which was Homer as a kid. I've done The Simpsons Summer Wingding and Winter Wingding. And I think that's it in terms of the specials. But mostly like Bart Simpson. Did a lot of Lisa's stories and The Simpsons.
And how did you get into that?
I have a friend who, she does a cleanup art for Life in Hell, Matt Groening's strip.
Yeah.
And she also works at Bongo, and they were looking for writers, and I auditioned, and I didn't think I got it for a long time, but then eventually they got back to me, and I started writing for them. So every once in a while I do a story for them. Sometimes I do a bunch of stories. It's, you know, it's freelancing. It's a little like feast or famine in the world of freelancing.
You wrote before that, though, then?
Oh, yeah. I write all kinds of stuff. I write screenplays and novels. I've written for Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher. I wrote jokes for the show.
Nice.
I wrote for Space Ghost Coast to Coast after it got on the GameTap website, and they were actually licensing the show, and they had the voice actors and everything. And I was writing episodes for that. That was very exciting. I've written, everything. I've written games. I did a lot of games because I worked at Kenzer & Company. I wrote the Hacklopedia of Beasts. I rewrote 1,600 monsters for Hackmaster. I wrote my own game, Complete Mafia for D20, which you can find online and here at the show, which is Dungeons & Dragons rules, but Mafia stuff.
Which is what every Dungeon Master wants in their campaign, is a Mafia in the background.
It's actually what the players want. Yeah. Because, see, the players will be forced to be noble. And after a while, it's such a great on them. And they just want to come in and massacre the villagers and screw them. Because they got the treasure anyway. And they're poor. And, like, why should we go risk our lives for these monsters?
Uh-huh.
And in Complete Mafia, it's the opposite of being forced to be noble. You're rewarded for being ruthless and shrewd. You're punished for being noble.
Oh.
So it's hard. It's a different kind of game, but it's interesting to watch people play because some people take to it a little too well. I did a demo one time at a gaming con, and these group, it was mostly girls. They were about 14 to 16, and a couple of guys, and they uh-huh. played, and the girls ran circles around the guys, and they were just ruthless. They sacrificed them. There was this whole thing where they had to, like, shake down this nightclub. And then they decided to rob the place and leave the boys stranded, shooting it out with the cops, and they escaped with the money. And their only complaint was, you know, they didn't get enough money at the end. Damn it, we got to do better next time. They were, like, so ruthless, it was frightening.
You're kind of bringing Dungeons & Dragons down to that old adage of the bad guys are always more interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
So everybody's going to be a bad guy now. So that's quite a body of work. And then after The Simpsons, what did you decide to do after that? Because, I mean,
I'm still working on The Simpsons. The Mighty Mo Szyslak came out yesterday. And this is May 17th, 18th, when we're recording this. So it came out that Wednesday.
Nice.
But the newest work I have is I have a book out. It's a book with illustrations in it, not a comic book. It's called... can I curse on this show? Or,
yes.
Okay. It's called Fuck You, I'm Italian, Why We Italians Are Awesome. And it's all about Italian heritage, and it's a funny book. And it came out from Ulysses Press on March 15th, The Ides of March. And it's available on Barnes & Noble and Amazon and IndieBound. And it's a big seller here in South Philly.
That's a lot of work. I mean, because you've got, I don't know, 15, 20 different comics here.
I don't even have them all here. If I had every one of my comics here, I'd need five tables.
Where do you find the time to do all of that?
This is what I do. I mean, this is what I do full time. I write. You know, it's hard to be a writer and make money.
Yeah.
You got to hustle and you got to get the work. You know, I've done weird jobs. I ghostwrite stuff, and that's how I'm making my money right now currently. But like I did a book called Puppies Gone Wild, where I had to make wacky comments about puppies, but, you know, it was for kids, so I had to be very light and nice. I've done all these weird sort of spec screenplays you're never going to see, or TV shows you're never going to see. I've written, you know, stuff for clients that, you know, you get at work off of Craigslist. That's how I get a lot of my work.
Craigslist?
Yeah,
really?
Because it's just people who want, maybe they want a movie or screenplay. Maybe they want a book about their life. Maybe they're a producer just looking for an actual producer looking for something different. You know, that's the beauty of the internet. You can find work anywhere if you hustle.
Yeah, well, that's the first time I've heard Craigslist. You know, usually people are meeting up on Facebook, even Reddit, I've heard, but not that.
The nice thing about Craigslist is you can find people who are actually looking, as opposed to something like Facebook and Twitter. You know, the social media, people are not as serious about, you know, once you're at Craigslist and you put an ad up for a writer, you're kind of a little serious about it, especially if you're going to pay money. Then you're serious. If people ask you to do stuff for free, they're not really serious about it. and they could just evaporate like that. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm knocking people who want to collaborate. And, you know, they don't have the money. I get that. But, you know, if you're going to be serious about a project, you got to put some money behind it.
Well, like you said, it's hard to be a writer and make money. All right. Well, we've got a whole bunch of other stuff here besides Simpson stuff. Mm-hmm. The one thing that caught my eye when I walked past your table is this, The Fix. Mm-hmm. And why it caught my eye is because it's kind of a horror thing with the guy with the glowing eyes and the glow coming out of his mouth. And like I said, I remember that for, I'm like, first time I've seen something like that, I think was Big Trouble in Little China, with the bad guy in that. But it looks, the comic book looks kind of freaky when you see the guy with glowing eyes. What is that about?
Because on the cover, by the way. That's like me in photos that we did in Photoshop in the late 90s when like it was kind of harder to do. They had an effect called I don't know, light beam or something. And you could just click it, and then I colored it a little bit. But the premise of The Fix, it's about the most powerful substance in the universe and the world's worst detective. He's not stupid. He's just really bad at his job. And Fix has this jar of stuff he acquired, which he won't tell anybody how he got it, but he can, it's sort of like a cheat. He can drink this stuff and get clairvoyant visions to solve mysteries. But it's kind of like a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Mm-hmm. And since he's such a horrible detective, he has to go back and kind of prove what he already knows. And he's terrible at that. So he ends up doing it like in a weird, like more of like a con artist way. Like he's a trick people and stuff. And then he also gets these uncontrollable side effects from the power that don't help him. They usually hinder him in some way. Like in one story I wrote, which I don't think we ever published, he turns gaseous. And like... and like in the middle of a shootout and like loses all his guns and like, you know, he can't help anybody. And he's like trying to pull himself together. And then later he pulls himself together. And it's like, oh crap. Now I don't have my guns. but like, that's sort of like, I described it as X-Files meets Clerks because the main character, I based it on myself. And he's just sort of this kind of slacker who hangs out at his office and he's a detective, but really is his partner who's dead, built the detective agency. He was the detective. He was more like the guy who could promote the thing and get clients. Mm-hmm. But then his partner died in a story I wrote, and like he was left with the detective agency, and he's kind of too lazy to close it because it was his friend. But, you know, he's really awful detective, so he gets these missions and then takes this stuff and cheats and then, you know, gets in all this trouble.
Well, what made you put yourself on the cover then? Even deeper, like you're saying, you're based on yourself, and he's a slacker, but you're obviously not a slacker,
right?
So how does that work?
Well, it's, you know, when you write, every character is sort of a piece of you, and I kind of like to take that be a little more direct with that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the characters I do, sometimes they are me, like exactly me, and sometimes they're based on me. Fix was sort of based on me, and then. There were characters. I did a comic called, on the webcomic factory, called Comic Book Mafia. And the premise is that all the guys who are publishing comics are like mafia families. And we sort of rough people up and, you know, to get our comics.
It's nothing like in real life.
Right, I'm sure. Right.
And, no, it doesn't resemble anything.
But I put myself in it, and I was sort of the enforcer of the company. And I would beat up fanboys to, like, get what I wanted. I'd slap them with comics, like, how's this for an issue one? Hey, you better tell me what you know, or you're not going to be near mint anymore.
Or I'll slap you with the gold cover.
Yeah. And me and Christian Baranek, who co-wrote it with me, we were both in the comic. And so it was fun to do because we could do these exaggerated personas of ourselves. And it's also interesting when you do yourself in a comic because you can explore things that you don't have to build a character and then explore it. You could just explore the idea. Mm-hmm. I did another comic called, it was based on all like my nightmares.
Okay.
So the whole comic was just my fears. So I was in every single strip just worrying about things and like being horrified at the world and things that I, you know, these irrational fears of being decapitated or being killed in the city, or or getting a disease and dying unknown and unloved and old. And, you know, you could explore that for a long time before you sort of, okay, I'm done with this.
Wow. Sounds a little bit like something that Dirk Manning would come up with. We've talked to him before. So what was your favorite thing to work on? I mean, because you have, like I said, you got a lot here at the table. I'm sure all your listeners can see that. But what was your favorite thing to work on?
That's a tough question because, you know, it's like picking between your children. I love it all. I mean, I write stuff that I like to read. I really like working on The Simpsons. I'm a huge fan of the show. I like doing comedy more often than not. My first comic, Jersey Devil, was not comedy. It was more dark and mysterious and sort of Batman Spawn-esque and that kind of thing. But I like to do a lot of comedy stuff. I like to do stuff that takes place in South Jersey because that's an area I know. Mm-hmm. So like The Fix takes place in South Jersey. Jersey Devil, of course, is part of the Jersey Pine Barrens. I did a graphic novel, which is also on the Webcomic Factory, called Lester Crenshaw Is Dead, about a comic geek who gets turned into a vampire, but he's really bad at it, and his mother and his stepmother and his sister have to help him be a vampire. So that takes place in South Jersey, and then in the sequel story, we bring the Jersey Devil into it, so that's kind of like a cool crossover. And that's fun to do, too, because I'm a big fan of Kurt Vonnegut, and that's what he would do in his novels.
Yeah.
Like, he would mention this character in one novel, maybe he'd be a side character, and then in the next novel, he'd be the main character, or he'd be in a, you know, Kilgore Trout was in a lot of them, and then he finally did a Kilgore Trout thing. And
it all ends with Ice Nine,
basically. Yeah. Depending on, I mean, his continuity is a little weird, but, you know, it's fun to play with a universe of characters like that. You don't need Marvel Comics and DC Comics to do it. I'm not bashing that, but, you know, in some respects, the Marvel and DC universes, I always describe them as fishbowls filled with action figures, where the action figures only go in, but they never come out. And
true.
The problem with that is, eventually the universe just gets top heavy with all these crazy characters that were supposed to be cool and unique, but now they're everywhere. You know, it's like that issue of The Tick, where The Tick goes to New York to fight crime, but there's so many superheroes, they have to divvy them up, and they only get to fight crime for about 10 minutes on a street corner, and they're running around going, is there any crime? Do you need help? And that's the way it's become now. It's like there's not a big universe, you know? When you look at a show like Rick and Morty, the great thing about it is there's always something going on. Like, you come in the middle of something, Rick's already been doing like 10 different things, and then as the show progresses, you realize there were these other things you only see half of, and then as the show ends, there's even more stuff he's on to do. Like, he's living a life way outside of you. He doesn't need you. And that's a great thing that I think has been lost in a lot of the mainstream comics. They become too self-important. You know, I love Batman, but I don't want to see an issue about Bruce Wayne brooding for 20 pages, especially in a 22-page comic. I want him to be kicking ass and doing all this, like, you know, he's supposed to be a genius. I want him to be doing so many things that I go, wow, what? I want to see some of this that you didn't show me, but you really made it sound cool, you know? It's like the Boba Fett effect, I like to say. Mm-hmm. Like, Boba Fett was a great character when he was just a little part of the Star Wars universe.
Oh, yeah, but then he blew up.
Then he blew up, and then it was like, well, now you're beating us over the head. They did the same thing with Lobo. Mm-hmm. Lobo was a great character. And then it was like, oh, here's a series and another series and another series and another series. Dude, he was a great little side character. Now you're just beating us over the head. He wasn't meant to be, like, stage front. There are characters that are meant to be just these cool guys in the background of things that sneak in and out every once in a while, not like full-fledged, like, oh, well, we got to see his secret origin and everything. Yeah. They don't work that way.
Nuance is good, but if you overexpose a character, they grow to a point where they're not what they were created for.
Right.
Like, Lobo was supposed to be this big, dumb enforcer that comes in, you know.
No, he was supposed to be this guy that people talked about in whispers because they were incredibly afraid of him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, in Legion, you hear, like, they didn't even want to say his name.
Wiped out his own race.
Yeah.
You know,
like, who is this guy? And it was great. But then when you actually see him, it devalues him somewhat. And when you see him over and over again, it really starts to devalue him. Same thing with Wolverine. Wolverine was kind of that way when he first started. You know, he was this brooding guy who was in the X-Men, but kind of not. And, like, we didn't know his whole deal. But now it's like, okay, we've seen him go to Japan. It's like, dude, there's plenty of room in the universe to make all new characters. You know, one of the things about Jack Kirby that I used to love when I read the Fantastic Four, and I'm not old enough to have read the Fantastic Four when he was doing it as new, but I looked at some of the old stuff, and there would be, like, an issue of the Fantastic Four where they're fighting, and, like, an NYPD cop comes over and like, helps them, like, just out of the blue. Or, you know, there's one great issue where this guy who's African-American helps the Fantastic Four and has to sacrifice himself at the end of the issue in order to save the world. And, like, he comes out of nowhere, helps save the world, dies, and that's the end of the issue. Like, you never see side characters like that anymore. You're like, these little people who are just happen to be on the street in the wrong place at the wrong time, being caught up in the moment.
Or wrong place at the right time.
Yeah. You know, like, that was amazing that he would do that. Like, so many writers are trapped in this little bubble, like, well, we got to do superheroes, and he's got to save somebody, and like,
yeah.
Dude, like, that's not a city street. Like, you're drawing New York. Nobody's outside. Where, you know, let's see some cars and some people and, like, a world that actually makes sense. Like, how does Gotham City even function anymore? How does it function? You're telling me, like, there's 900 maniacs running around the street every day robbing banks and, you know, torturing people, and Batman's the only guy? Like, why doesn't the police shoot somebody?
And enough that Batman can go to any street and find one.
Yeah.
You know, but while it's in progress, not 15 minutes after it happened.
Harlan Ellison finally got to write a Batman story, and it was a great story. It was about Batman on a night in Gotham when nothing was happening. And he, like...
That makes sense.
He sees somebody running towards an old lady, thinks she's gonna be robbed, and then it turns out he's just helping her across the street, and little things like that, and finally ends up in a park, just sitting on a park bench, relaxing, like, nothing's happening. Like, it was a great issue. It was a great story.
Yep.
Like, we never get to breathe in the DC Marvel Universe anymore. It's just constant, like, cliffhanger, 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 cliffhanger. Because it's this desperation to get you to buy. You don't need that desperation. You got to be cool, like Darkseid. That was the great thing about Darkseid. Like, everybody was afraid of him. He never used his power. Ever. And then, like, you know, one time he used his power, and it's, like, amazing. But it's better that you don't do anything. You just threaten people. And you have a reputation. Like, that holds weight with character. But... You know, what do I know? I haven't written for the Marvel and DC universe yet.
Well, I mean, yeah. So you're here at the Wizard World Comic Con,
yes,
2018, Philadelphia. What other Comic Cons are you going to be at for the next couple of weeks?
Oh, boy. I did schedule one in July. I'm going to the Frankfurt Comic Con in Kentucky,
okay,
which I've never been to. And so I'm excited to go in a new area. Other than that, I got a signing at River City Comics in Berlin, New Jersey on June 2nd. We're going to be signing copies of the Moe Szyslak issue, and I'll have other comics as well. And I'll just be, you know, getting signings. I haven't scheduled a lot of stuff yet, but, you know, I just call up or email, and eventually I end up somewhere, you know. But the big shows, they're tough to do because they're so expensive,
uh-huh,
you know. It's... Dragon Con, I love doing Dragon Con, but man.
I've heard a lot about that.
Oh, you haven't been to Dragon Con?
Well, I've been to New York Comic Con, and that's like, you know, when you got 180,000 people, you know, backed into a corner.
Right.
It's like, I can't imagine what Dragon Con's like.
Dragon Con's so much better because it's not in a convention facility. It's in hotels.
Yeah.
So it goes all night. People will close. Some of the rooms will close. Some people will just stay at their tables like till 2 o'clock in the morning selling stuff. We're doing stuff, and people run. It was the original cosplay con. It's just Mardi Gras for geeks. It's the best show ever. I love that show. Guys at Dragon Con, you do such an amazing job, and I love it. it's really good. I guess what I want to talk about while I got you here, we have time to talk?
Oh, yeah.
Just real quick. I just, one of the things that's really upset me is the sort of PC mindset that's sort of permeating comics now on Twitter and various places. It's really sort of impacted a lot of artists and creators and performers in a negative way.
Well, how so? I mean, which I've heard, because there's a lot of angles that can come from.
I know. And we don't have time. I don't think we have time to get into the specifics of everyone. And I'm not saying you shouldn't have opinions, but this idea of like shouting down people or boycotting them or keeping them like out of society just because they hold different opinions or even really horrible opinions. You know, the creator, there's creators and then there's their opinions, and it's almost two different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand, look, if there's somebody you really disagree with and you don't want to support them, fine. But like performers kind of put themselves out there and creators, and they're vulnerable. And to sort of cut them down as a fan, you know, I used to be very angry and idealistic when I was young, and I was very much like a PC police kind of person. But then over the years, I realized that it was more me than anything else, and that I really needed to give people time to talk and sort of hear their opinions, even if they're bad opinions, so I could sort of hone my own, and so we can sort of come to a dialogue.
Well, are you talking about fans going after creators or creators going after creators? Or?
Well, I think it's a mix of both, and I think a lot of it's on Twitter right now. There's a lot of angry things going on Twitter, and it's like, look, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything is my rule. Like, I go on Reddit, and I see horrible things on Reddit all the time that I don't like. I rarely vote anything down on Reddit. Like, once in a while, if something's really, like, horribly racist and horrible, I'll vote it down. But, you know, more often than not, I don't waste my time, you know? And part of the thing is it's just sort of this negativity that pervades the internet. And I like to try to be positive. I was a very negative person in my early life, but now I sort of be more positive. So when I look at something, I don't immediately say, oh, this person's horrible. I think to myself, well, maybe they had a reason for this, or maybe they're having a tough time,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you have to think outside the box a little before you immediately come down on a person and say, well, I'm going to destroy them. I'm going to deplatform them or whatever. I'm going to complain about them. Like, think before you do that. Really, like, know your stuff. Really dig into it if it's your thing, and know what you're saying before you go into a person, well, you know, who may have said something 10 years ago that they regret.
Well, that is kind of the problem with the internet. It makes it very easy to immediately, in the heat of the moment, go ahead and make comments that you may later really regret.
Yeah, and thank God I'm old enough that when I was that age, there was no internet because I can only imagine the material that people would have on me when I was young and angry, and I would just, and I was, you know, I do stand up comedy, and I'll just like, you know, I would rank on people badly. And there's places on the internet where you could get it out in a positive way. Like, my favorite subreddit on Reddit is Roast Me. You ever go to Roast Me?
No, I've heard of it though.
So it's brilliant. You can insult people all day and they love it. They thank you for it. And
the better the roast, the better.
Yes. Yes. And it's all in good fun. And nobody gets upset. I mean, once in a while, a depressed person goes on there and you're like, I'm not going to insult him. He seems like he's in a bad way. But, you know, it's fun. And, you know, these guys who just rip people because of their political views or whatever their views are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, regardless, we all have to live together. Let's try to, like, you know, try to understand people before you just dig into them. There's evil in the world, but it's very, 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 very rare. And you're not some vigilante who's going to change things by screaming at someone on Twitter. You're just not.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to think of it as comic books in the entertainment industry are here for us to get away from that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So enjoy it. Try to leave it better than when you found it.
Yeah, there's plenty of stuff out there. If you don't like something, just move on. I mean,
because there's whatever your taste is. There's a table here at the convention, or online.
You don't have to like my stuff. If you don't like it, you're offended by it. I don't know what to tell you. I'm not trying to offend you, but you know, artists have to come to that edge sometimes. Sometimes they want to offend you, And they want to get you riled up because that's the point of the piece. It depends on the piece. I mean, I do a lot of comedy, so it can go either way. But, you know, I also do political stuff. I do a comic called The Anti-War Comic, which goes off tomorrow. And sometimes I'll get angry responses to that. And then I go, well, I mean, you know, I'll discuss it. But if you're just going to scream at me and call me ignorant, I'm like, well.
If there's no discussion, then
yeah.
No end point. No,
I'm willing to say, well, maybe I'm wrong. I've made mistakes. Believe me, I am legendary for typos. I'm legendary for typos. I've made so many typos. And I've made dumb comments and mistakes in my life. We all do. But you got to, you know, when somebody else does it, you have to say, well, I do that too. You know, how would I feel if like somebody just came down on me and said this? Like, you know, you don't have to like go after somebody. It's my whole point.
I'm assuming that there's like a very specific instance that happened that's the reason you're talking about this, or maybe
I'm hearing it more and more. I mean, there was an incident which I won't go into because it was done over email. It's private, and
that's
like
fine.
It was a fellow creator, and he got mad at me and he was offended, whatever. But he didn't make it public, and I certainly don't want to make it public.
Fair enough.
How he was offended. But I'm hearing it more and more from other guys that I've worked with. You know, I just talked to an artist today. His colorist quit the book because he was offended by what the writer wrote. And it was a story. Like, you know, it was just a story. It wasn't like an opinion kind of story. It was just a story. Same thing with me. I wrote a story. And, like, sometimes bad things happen in the story. Sometimes you create characters that are very ugly people. And, you know, sometimes those people are... they do horrible things. I mean, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want a bad guy who's not, you know, politically correct. Would he be a bad guy if he was so politically correct? You know, if you do a story about the real Nazis in World War II, I mean, are they supposed to be nice? And, you know, they're supposed to be horrible people. So you got to, like, give creators a little leeway here to, like, play in that arena. Because, you know, a lot of people who write or read comics, they want to be creators too. And if you think social justice warriors, if you're immune to that stuff, you forget it. Because more and more there are people who are very liberal people who are getting caught up in this. And they're shocked. Like, I'm the most liberal person I know. Like, why are you coming after me? I made one mistake or I made a comment. Like, I didn't even mean it that way. It's taken out of context. It's like, anybody can be the victim of mob mentality if it's taken to the extreme. So all I'm saying is chill the fuck out, internet. Just chill out.
That's a new dimension on the I can't find an artist thing. Because we talk to plenty of people that have a hard enough time finding artists when they're writers. But to have that also on top of, you know, artist disappearance.
It's a real issue. It's mostly an issue in the United States. I work with a lot of artists outside the U.S.,
And they could care less. They just
no. They're not caught up in the PC culture like we are here. You know, if it's Canada, United States, or England, some parts of Europe, yeah, they're kind of tuned into it. But you know, places in South America, it's a bit old school. It's like the 70s down there, and not that they're insensitive human beings. It's just like it's not their thing. They're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
And also when you're when English is your second language, you may not catch all the nuances of those arguments. So a lot of guys I work with, they don't know about this stuff, and it's probably better that they don't know. I don't want them to feel like, oh my God, am I doing some controversial comic that's hurting my career in some way? You know, that's another thing too. You know, a lot of guys get into the comic industry or web comics or whatever, and they post like a couple of web comics and they think, oh my God, I have a reputation to uphold. Like nobody knows who you are. Like, relax. It's cool. Like I've worked on The Simpsons for like over 10 years. Nobody knows who the hell I am. I've got real credits and like, I'm about as famous as like a Wikipedia page. So trust me, you'll be fine. Just relax. In 10 minutes, the internet forgets everything anyway. So.
Well, beside your Wikipedia page, where can people find all of your comics?
You can go to thewebcomicfactory.com is the main site that I use to alert people of things. And, of course, superfrat.com.
Yeah.
And there are links to my website, my actual website, which is thefixsite.com. So you can go there and see the paper comics, because that was the paper comics site. And then the Webcomic Factory has links to it, whatever. But, you know, the Webcomic Factory is where I announce stuff now. You know, I used to announce stuff on the Fix site, but it's like an old school site, and I haven't figured out how to update it because I'm only so web savvy.
Well, and you've got better things to do, like write more, apparently.
Yes. And when you're, you know, working on this stuff, you gotta pay the rent. So yeah. You gotta hustle out there. I'm not the only writer who does this kind of stuff. Like, I know guys who, man, are constantly on the hustle, just trying to find work, and they'll write just about anything. And that's another factor too. Like, you know, when people are criticizing, it's really easy to criticize if you live with your parents and you don't have it, you know, you're taken care of and you don't have rent and money. Yeah. You know, you gotta go out there and, you know, people get evicted, they lose their homes and they end up on the street. It happens. It doesn't happen often. Fortunately, it never happened to me, thank God, but, you know, it's been a few close calls.
Everybody has their own situation. And, you know, again, you're not the only writer or creator we've talked to that this is hard. You have to go to so many conventions to keep your cred up, to keep selling things, to get the word out.
And you really can't make money at cons, really. If you're an artist, you can, because you can charge like $100 for a print or whatever. Like, my friend Tommy Castillo, who passed away, he used to
I met his wife at the Philly Comic Con.
Oh, yeah, she's great.
Couple times. Yeah.
Tommy was crazy character.
Yeah.
He used to, man, he could make, you know, $10,000, $12,000 at a con, you know, because he could just sell so much artwork. Writers can't do that. You just can't. You couldn't sell enough comics, you know.
But you have to come here to get your books, get people
to
buy your books.
Yeah, it's mostly exposure. You could break even, you know, and if you work some deals, you can make a little money, but you're not going to make a living at it as a writer. But the advantage is I can do a lot more than an artist, obviously, right? I mean, you see, I can write a lot of different stories and get them out there. You know, artists, they can only do, they're really good, they could do a book a month. They're like really on it and have no life. You could do a book a month, but that's hard. That's a lot of work.
Yeah. Have you seen Castillo's pillow?
His pillow?
His wife has a pillow with his image on it.
Oh, my long God. Pillow.
And at the Great Philly Comic Con a couple months ago, she had a chair sitting on it like he was there with her.
Tommy would have loved that. I think he – that's funny. Tommy was a character, man. We did a lot of shows together. I was there.
That was a shame.
We were promoting when he got the Batman gig, and Bob Schreck came to the table. I was in the bathroom. And he's like, I came back. He's like, I got to go to DC Comics tomorrow. This guy wants me to draw Batman. I'm like, what the hell happened when I was in the bathroom? Like, how could I have not been here? But, you know, he did fine art for years. And a lot of his work is just fantastic. He did the cover for Complete Mafia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was one of his paintings.
Nice. We're pointing to the book, by the way.
Oh, just right. I keep forgetting we're not on video.
All right. Well, it was a pleasure talking to you.
You too, John.
And I'm very glad that I stopped by. And again, The Fix.
TheFixSite.com, TheWebComicFactory.com, and SuperFrat.com.
Yep. And check his stuff out, guys.
That was a most excellent interview there, John.
I can't believe he did the Bartman.
Right in the middle of the interview. Anyway. He dropped the mic and started doing it.
Kind of weird. So.
I mean, you had mentioned before we cut away that New York and I think we're going to have a lot of great interviews.
Yeah. And check out Tony's, just to get back for 1 second, check out Tony's comic, The Fix, because it's really, really interesting. If I remember correctly, it's about a guy who is almost has godlike powers, but he's just really incompetent. And it's so funny.
Like one of us got powers.
Yes.
Yeah, basically, right. Only maybe not that bad.
But as I was saying, this is one of the first conventions where, like, because we're on the press list, we now have media people sending us information, and we're trying to line up some great interviews. More details on those as they emerge. Keep your ears peeled, because definitely this is going to be a good show for us. And
the company.
Okay.
I was going to say the company that owns my medical insurance, they'll be very happy because I might only get slide tackled half the time by the security this time around instead of every time.
And real quick, if you are listening to this episode before the 14th, or if on the 14th and you're planning to head on to Keystone Comic Con this weekend, the 14th, 15th, and 16th at the Pennsylvania Convention Center here in Philadelphia, PA. Make sure you stop by Greg Horn's booth in Artist Alley and say hello. I will be there all weekend. You know, obviously helping my friend Greg, but if anyone wants to come by and say hi, make sure you stop by and maybe we'll hang out or something. So that's not an invitation to crazy people. So John, stay home. Oh.
Yeah. I'm saving up my energy for New York.
Oh, okay.
Trust me, we're going to need it.
Yeah, I think so. And finally, just want to make sure to say, if you're listening to this through Twitter or whatever, make sure you check out our website, geek.com. Follow us on, or subscribe to us on on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or iHeartRadio. And, you know, follow us on social media at Superhero Speak. And if you have a question for us, because we didn't have a viewer question this week, make sure you slide into our DMs and send us any question you want us to answer, any topic you'd like us to gladly talk about on next week's show.
Okay, almost any topic, just in case.
No, we can talk about that night that you and I got really drunk in the hotel room.
I said almost any topic.
Well, this took a turn.
It usually does with him. That's why I try to shut him down quick.
So on that note, boys and girls, as always, thanks for listening, and don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.